One of the landmark achievements of President Obama's presidency has been his efforts to restore diplomatic ties between Cuba and the United States.
It is an outdated burden on the Cuban people. It's a burden on the Americans who want to work and do business or invest here in Cuba. It's time to lift the embargo.
But in a statement just yesterday, House Speaker Paul Ryan said that easing trade restrictions will only help finance the Castro's grip on power and jeopardize the intellectual property rights of American businesses. For more on this issue, we are joined by Rosella Brevetti, senior legal editor for Bloomberg BNA. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And Rosella, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what the president did say about this. He said this directive would take a comprehensive and whole-of-government approach to promote engagement with the Cuban government and people. And the thing that really caught my eye, make our opening to Cuba irreversible. Can he do that?
Technically, no. Because any Congress, any future administration can reverse what the president has done. But I would think it would be very unlikely because U.S. businesses have invested in Cuba under this opening. We'll have to see what the next administration brings to the table.
Well, they've invested, but they've been investing with at least one hand tied behind their back. There's some really interesting issues about the banking sector in Cuba. Tell us a little bit about that.
I know it was a big disappointment for U.S. businesses that in the last set regulations that were issued, the banking problem was not addressed. And it does tie the hands of businesses behind their backs to try to deal with doing business in Cuba and have all these restrictions.
I mean, is it essentially a cash and carry system?
Yes.
So that's what the banking issue is, and that's something that they have to address now?
There's no timeline for addressing it, really, but unless it's addressed, U.S. businesses will continue to be at a disadvantage.
And this is a situation where U.S. business investment is there, but there's still so much uncertainty in this. You tend to forget this embargo is still in place.
Yes, and it will take Congress to remove it. And so far, they don't seem to have an inclination to do that. I mean, you heard Speaker Ryan say that he has, you know, supports the embargo. So that doesn't bode well for the near future anyway.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what it could mean. People think rum and cigars, you know, they think about going down there on vacation. But there's a lot more to this. There's trade, travel, scientific collaboration. In your piece, you mentioned scholarships and education and private sector growth. Let's get into the meat of this and how this could actually be mutually beneficial if it works.
Well, the latest set of regulations opened up more opportunities for collaboration between scientists, paved the way for more grants and scholarships. I think that will be mutually beneficial. We'll just have to see how it all plays out. As you mentioned, the embargo is still there, and that impedes a lot of, you know, transactions that we have between our two countries.
And one of the big sectors that's been lobbying in the United States to open up trade is the agriculture sector. They want to sell a lot of grain to Cuba. They think it's a good market. Meanwhile, we think we could buy some organic oranges because their agriculture hasn't quite gotten to the GMO stage or the biotech development yet. But they also have had some frustration. They've been trading since 2000, legitimately, again, on that cash financing basis. They've been trying to open up this market. Have they been making any progress?
They've been making progress in bringing attention to the issue, but it will require statutory change. And so far, legislation really hasn't moved in this Congress. I think next year we might see some movement, but we'll have to wait and see what that brings.
When the president was talking about a whole-of-government approach for working with Cuba, he was talking about the guidance for specific agencies and how they would deal with respect to Cuba. Do you foresee a time when all of the different agencies would maybe have a little interaction with Cuba, whether it's the Department of Education or Health and Human Services, that everybody would get a little piece of this action somehow?
I do foresee that. I think the president's directive foresees that as well. But there are statutory restrictions.
It's just almost impossible to imagine at this point.
So those statutory restrictions have to be cleared away before any of that can happen. But, you know, it's not to say that we haven't been dealing with them under, you know, within the confines of the law.
So the statutory restrictions having to be dealt with. You know, a lot of the reason that this embargo has stayed in place, it seems, deals with the domestic politics, specifically Florida domestic politics. And you've seen that in this issue. You see Marco Rubio standing very strong against this, strong force within the Republican Party, Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, both being responsive to that. But are we seeing any shift in sentiment as time goes on?
I think public sentiment is shifting. I think the younger generation doesn't have the same view. A lot of the older Cuban Americans or Cuban immigrants see Castro as the devil. Mm-hmm. Any interaction with him is not seen as a good thing by them. I don't think that that attitude translates, trickles down to the younger people.
I have several friends who are of Cuban descent, and some of them do embrace that attitude that Castro is of the devil and Cuba is of the and should never ease these restrictions. Whereas others, when they first heard that this may be happening a couple of years ago, were in tears of joy. There's really a dichotomy, a separation there. And it might be important to explore that a little bit, because that could, as you said, help direct which way Congress winds up going with this.
Yes, I think definitely. But I think that people who immigrated from Cuba remember what it was like under Castro. And I think for them, it's a lot harder to view the issue with a new lens, whereas younger people don't remember those times.
But in the meantime, business is being done. And business is being done in Cuba. I know my dad is looking forward to the relaxation of the ban on all those mechanics who can come up and show how to keep a classic car running for 60 years. But that's not happening. And meanwhile, other markets are moving into it. Oh, yeah. Best mechanics in the world are living in Cuba because they've had to do it. Innovation. We're all excited about the seminars coming someday. But in the meantime, this business is going elsewhere. And who is benefiting at this moment from U.S. inaction?
There are a lot of countries that are benefiting, and that's one of the arguments that the Obama administration has made, that, you know, other, you know, agricultural exporters that do not have our advantage. We have a great advantage being, you know, 80 miles away mm-hmm. from Cuba. Other countries don't have that, but, you know, we're seeing them taking markets that, you know, should rightfully be going to our producers.
Bloomberg BNA's Rosella Brevetti, want you to stay right there. We're going to come right back and continue our conversation on Cuba. And we might even talk a little bit lobster fishing with you. When we come back, you're listening to Politics, Policy, and Power. This is Bloomberg.
Joining us again is Rosella Brevetti, the senior legal editor for Bloomberg BNA.
And as we have been talking about U.S.-Cuba relations and where they may go from here, Rosella, I think it's important we make the point that none of this is going to work unless Cuba is also on board. Tell us a bit about that.
I think Cuba has welcomed our overtures, and but one point that they have made repeatedly is that the U.S. needs to remove the embargo, because they see that as they see it almost as a act, not really an act of war, but close to it. And they say that their economy has been suppressed by this decades-old policy that we've maintained that is still in place. And that's one thing that they keep pressing, and I expect that they will continue to keep, you know, making that point until it is finally removed.
And that's a fascinating point you make, Rosella, that there is another side for this. We always look at it from an American perspective, but there are Cuban domestic politics as well. Something else people should know about is just the pure breadth of your beat at Bloomberg BNA. We're looking at your byline and we're seeing everything from Cuba to stories about the European Union and live American lobsters. Now, this is an important trade case that just went up. I'd like you to tell us a little bit about Sweden and a pretty acute case of crustacean frustration.
Yes, Sweden discovered about 32 lobsters in European waters. But the thing is, they were North American lobsters, which is...
So they were trespassing.
They were trespassing, and they got very upset about this because they were afraid that they would start interbreeding with the lobsters there and would impact the population of the European lobsters, and they wanted the European Union to declare this American lobster a invasive species. It went up to the committee. The committee declined to do that. So as a result, U.S. exporters can keep sending live American lobsters into that market.
And the $200 million main industry is preserved.
And can we make the point that the committee's name is the Invasive Alien Species Committee?
Yes.
That's a terrific name for any committee.
It's kind of the arbiter of arthropods in Europe.
Apparently so.
You had that ready to go, didn't you, Bjerga?
Oh, don't be crabby,
you were all, oh, it's going to be one of those days. Rosella Brevetti, Senior Legal Editor for Bloomberg BNA. I want to thank you very much for joining us today. And I also wanted to touch on one more lobster story, Alan, if we could. You know, Hurricane Nicole tore through Bermuda. And it was nothing to joke about, except it stirred up some of the stuff from the bottom of the ocean, including a 14-pound lobster. It's bigger than a grown-up. It's you know, from stem to stern, it's huge. This huge lobster. So they didn't know what to do with it. Do we eat it? Do we put it in an aquarium, send it to a zoo? You know what they did? They put him back.
Aww.
I love that
Glad
story.
Somebody got their claws into that
Glad
story.
To hear that.
Oh, brother.
We're going to go and take an in-depth look at campaign spending next with our very own Ken Doyle. This is Politics, Policy, and Power, and this is Bloomberg.